There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 107 FM Talk 106.5 and hour number two of Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad you're here. Live local talk over the hour. Phone number, text line 343-0106, 343-0106. And yeah, I got some questions here coming in on email. Yeah, it's my friend, co-worker, Rennie Brabner, who's going to join us at 1:30 to talk about the story I put up on Twitter a second ago from Fox 10 News about 45 years later. And a man claims that his abduction was a thing. He's putting out the book now, this claim of a alien abduction back in 1973 for Calvin Parker. The connection to our buddy Rennie is that he was a reporter with WALA back then and did the story. So he's going to tell us more about this coming up at 1:30. And y'all believe people get abducted, taken up into the ship there and probed or whatever? Why is it always they got to do something with your... I wonder. All right. We'll talk about that. Also, to stick with a couple things that we're talking about before we went to the break. Number one, this Cohen story. I think he testifies on the 7th. This will be interesting. And if it's believable, the tweaking done to the polls out there, well, let's find out. I mean, if it's just like Sullivan's wacky carnival poll or something like that, who cares? If it shows up that it's polls of merit, then maybe that will absolutely put the final nail in the coffin for people believing it all in polling. But something else we want to get into here and discussed it a little bit yesterday, and the call from Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats to go ahead and delay the State of the Union address because of the shutdown. Linda Kenyon from Westwood One News talks more about this here.
Pelosi also tells reporters security for the event, especially during a government shutdown, is no small matter.
This is defined by the Secretary of Homeland Security as a national special security event.
And everyone in top-level U.S. government usually attends.
It is the President of the United States and the Vice President, the Congress of the United States, House and Senate, the Cabinet, acting as it is, but the Cabinet, Supreme Court of the United States, the diplomatic corps.
There has been no official response from the White House. Linda Kenyon, Washington.
All right, so there's the question of having the State of the Union during the shutdown. We'll see. I mean, this is for the president to decide. It's not for the Speaker of the House to decide. But like everything is going to be used right now on both sides for political ammunition. And that's why we continue this discussion. We've put up the online opinion poll questions, been up for, what, a week and a half now. Usually we have our unscientific and easily bribable online polls, except we don't ever get bribes. If you want to bribe me, I'll go ahead and give you the address here. But our polls are honest just because nobody's bribing us. But we've been asking this question, how long do you think it's going to take for the shutdown to be over? And it's got to be, and that's why, you know, talked one theory Brendan Kirby had, that he thought it would be House Republicans that may buckle here and move something along with House members of the Senate, Republican members of the Senate. That you heard Jeff Boer say, quite the contrary, he thinks there would be no reason that Republicans would want to do it. The question is, whose constituency is going to scream the loudest, right? And who will capitulate there? Because right now, if you look at President Trump, you look at Speaker Pelosi, you look at Chuck Schumer in the Senate, I don't see any of those three right now acting like they're getting any closer to ending the partial government shutdown, which is now setting every day new records in length. So it's going to unless they're working behind the scenes and I just don't know it, doesn't seem like they're getting closer. Is there a third way? Is there something to be worked out on this? Or will it just be something that hangs around for a while, months maybe, longer, and we continue the political sniping, whether you should have the State of the Union address? Now you hear the story. We do have Uncle Sam reached into his coat pocket and found an extra $20, so we have money to get the diplomats back to work. How long does this go on? I mean, tell me, what do you think? 343-0106, 343-0106, and is there a point where it is the threat and the fear of it will start to lose its teeth? Will the old dog lose its teeth here on this? Let's go to the phones and look here. Robert Kennedy Jr. checking in. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. So, yeah, let's talk this. I mean, we weren't, when you were in here back in late October and debating with Congressman Byrne, we weren't talking about a shutdown. We were talking about spending money, though, in Congress. So what's your take on this?
Yeah, my take on it is pretty consistent with what we talked about when we were on air together. There just needs to be an element of rationality that comes to this whole conversation. And at the end of the day, everybody in each position needs to do their job. And so one of the things that I've actually found fascinating about this particular conversation is that no one has talked about the role of the Senate Majority Leader and the decision that he has as an individual to take up the bills that were forwarded to him by the House of Representatives. Because if he actually did that, and you actually had to have a vote that was on record, I think we may find that folks on both sides of the aisle would be willing to vote to reopen the government, even if that additional funding is not included.
I don't know, though. You would look at, two things. You look at the members of the House and Senate that are not Pelosi, that's not President Trump, that's not Schumer, and then look at those three. Because those three seem to be either they're emblematic and figureheads for an idea or something else, because I don't see them signing on to anything. I mean, you have the president saying it's 5. Whatever billion or nothing, or keep the shutdown, and then you have Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer saying any money for the wall is immoral. You know, when you say immoral, that doesn't sound like a place where negotiation gets done. Like, not great is somewhere where negotiation gets done. Immoral, not so much in the negotiation field.
Yeah, I think you've touched on something there with the language. The only problem that creates in the broader conversation is that if you want to tie somebody to the specific literal words that come out of their mouth, then the sins, if they will, exist on both sides of the aisle.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And oh, so my gosh, yeah. And it's the new reality, right? You say something in context, out of context, whatever, and you're forever attached to it. I mean, it's your albatross, man. You wear it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I want to circle back, because I don't want to get distracted in the morality part of the conversation at this point in time. But I really want to focus on this Senate Majority Leader, right?
Okay.
So what is he holding right now? He's holding a bill or a series of bills to open up the departments, with the exception of Homeland Security.
Right.
With somewhere between, keep me honest here, $1.3 and $1.6 billion.
Yeah,
funding.
Yeah, right? I think you're right. Definitely in the ballpark.
Right. So if he puts it on the floor and people vote on it and it does not pass, then this particular part of the conversation ends, because there's nothing that actually goes to the president.
Yep, good point.
If it were to pass and it goes to the president, now it's no longer a philosophical conversation of what he's saying he will or will not do. He can either sign the bill to open the government and it becomes law and everybody goes back to work. He could veto it with comments, and it comes back, and then at that point in time, both the House of Representatives and the Senate can decide whether or not they want to override that veto.
Yeah, that's interesting. You put people on record. I have no problem with that. I mean, I know how the games of brinksmanship are played in Washington, but I, as a citizen, have no problem with people voting. You know, representatives that we duly elect, go vote. Get them to vote. Get them on record. I think that's a good thing.
Well, that's the reason why I wanted to call in, right? Because when we talk about us and our responsibilities as citizens, it's to understand what's really going on and what the path is to actually come to resolution, because that's really what we need to be holding our elected officials accountable to. It's just doing their job. All the
right.
posturing
yeah,
that's going
that.
On right now is all a result of the fact that in the previous Congress, when the Republicans were in control of both the House and the Senate, the Republican-led Senate passed, with unanimous consent, a continuing resolution, which would have had that $1.3 or $1.6 billion number, which was the original number, which was the number that sourced from the administration. And so it was that change that happened after it was passed by the Republican-led Senate, and President Trump said that he wanted to have funding.
Well, but the House, okay, but fairly, hey, Robert, but yeah, but fairly enough here. I mean, the because I listen, I've asked members, Republican members of the House, hey, how do y'all put all the pressure on right now when y'all couldn't get it done when you had, you know, bicameral control? And they said, well, you know, in the House, we passed out the we passed this bill out of the House for the full funding for the border wall. I don't know, full. We'll call it the $5 billion number for the border wall, but it had no, it didn't stand a chance in the Senate. And you're talking about the Senate was all in with the CR for the 1.3 or 1.6. There was obviously a disconnect in the Senate and the House, as quite often there are, even within the same party.
But Sean, you and I know, there was, you and I know that. When the continuing resolution passed, the continuing resolution methodology, if you will, it's not a good way to do business.
No, I'm sick of it.
But we know it's a way that business has been conducted for years and years and years. The House could have taken up that bill. The House could have passed that bill. And then the president is not saying what he will do, but he actually either has to sign it or veto it. And he could let it become a law without a signature, but that gets a little too complicated for this conversation.
Right, but where's the political benefit? I'm not talking about the benefit for we the people. Let's talk about where's the political benefit for either side? Because we've gotten to this point where, you know, there are so many out there that no matter what President Trump does, he could say that the sun rises in the east and the sky is blue. They're going to disagree with it. And there's those that even if President Trump said the sky is purple and the sun rises in the west, they would agree with it. So at that point, the idea of swaying people to come a little over this way or a little over that way, it seems gone to me, Robert. It seems, I mean, that train's left the station.
Well, you know, it's the problem that we always talk about whenever we want to reference the political establishment, right? At the end of the day, let's think about this in the reverse situation. If all of a sudden we had a bolt of lightning strike and the president was to get the full $5 billion plus for the wall, that wall is not going to be constructed tomorrow, right? But you're still going to have federal contractors who aren't being paid now who are never going to get back pay. And you have our TSA workers out there at Mobile Regional Airport or our Coast Guard retirees that are still really hurting as a result of not having paychecks that are funding their bank accounts now. And so the political necessity, if you will, is going to be who ends up experiencing the pain of not having those dollars in their pockets now. And I think ultimately that's going to be the thing that breaks the logjam. Because that's the reality that you can't get out of.
But where does it go? And that, the problem is I'm up against the break here, but I mean, where does that go? Does that logjam break from the Democrat side? You could speak to it from the Democrat side, or does it break from the Republican side? Well, I mean, which place feels the heat on their bottoms, their backside first? Both.
I actually think that it's probably going to be on the Republican side first.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that is because you just take our congressional area and how dependent we are on government funding, and particularly, you know, the love that we have for the Coast Guard, that at the end of the day, it's going to be that coupled with the federal contractors that support things like, you know, NOAA or FEMA, et cetera, that I think actually pushes us through the logjam. And then I think after that, then the president will have to make a decision as to whether or not he wants to call a national emergency.
All right. Well, and we will look at this. We'll score this. If we ever get this thing back running, we'll score this and see if you made the call on this day here in January.
Sounds good, Sean.
Thanks.
Well, hey, it's good to hear your voice. Happy New Year to you and your family, and I'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Hey, same to y'all, Robert. Thanks. Grab Mike when we get back from the break. And like I said, coming up at 1:30. This story, maybe you saw it the other night, about the alien abduction 45 years ago. A man who claims still that, yep, that happened. Well, our buddy, co-worker, Rennie Brabner, was there doing the report for Fox 10 way back in 1973, and he'll talk to us about that coming up.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 124 FM Talk 106.5. It is Midday Mobile. Okay, we go to the phones, but if I get a chance, I want to talk about a story that popped up yesterday. This is a sign of the times story, and I'm not somebody who, you know, it was always perfect back then, and now it's horrible. I mean, that's ridiculous as well. But when stories have to come out, I'll just give you a quick headline, then we're going to go to the phones. YouTube bans dangerous pranks and challenges. So YouTube is having to tell the people that are doing content for YouTube, y'all don't do stupid stuff and get yourself maimed or killed because we won't put your video up. Seems like eventually it would be a self-correcting problem, wouldn't it? All right, let's go to Mike in Baldwin County next. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Sean. I was listening to you and the other guy,
James. Robert, yeah.
Yeah, and he pretty well, you know, hit a lot of good stuff, and so did you. And when I look at the border situation, it's, you know, I agree, the Republicans had this thing on their plate, what, for 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing done about it, you know, just a lot of talk. And it seems like when the Democrats get into office, then all of a sudden you had all this talk about it. And to me, I see it lying at both of their plates, Republicans and Democrats. They're playing a game with this thing, and it seems like every time you get to a political year, you'll get something that arises that's got to get their voters out for the next election, besides just doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. Whenever it's time to do it, it almost seems like they pick and choose what can we use for something for our next election term to get out the votes.
Yeah, because the other stuff, it may be they think, well, and, you know, I'm going to have to agree with them, that the little more complex matters that we might be interested in are not the things that get people out to the polls.
And it's sad, but it's true, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But once this is resolved, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be resolved, then there's going to be another issue that's going to come up. And they're going to kind of pick and choose, can we use this for our next election to get out the votes? And the Democrats do it, the Republicans do it. And this is what the American people are sick of. They're tired of the...
Okay, but let me argue, if we're so sick of it...
It's almost like we're being used
as a pawn. Oh, we are, but if we're so sick of it, why do we continue to vote for those people?
Well, that's... Yeah, I'm in agreement with you, but the problem is we only have a two-party system.
Yep.
And are you going to vote for a Democrat? Are you going to vote for a Republican? They know this. They know the game has been set. And people are going to vote for one of the two. And we the American people, are stuck. We're actually stuck. We don't really have what you call a true choice anymore, either Republican or Democrat.
Well, there is there are other parties. I'm guilty of, I've been told so many times in my life I throw my vote away on parties. Really, it's only one. I vote Libertarian most times. That's a shocking thing. I don't, you know, people are always like, how about you and your Republican Party? I said, do I vote Republican a lot? Yeah, sure I do. Don't carry any card there. Probably usually default to the most liberty possible. But I get what you're saying. In practice and pragmatism, there are two parties to vote for. And yeah, they're both. Isn't that what happened with Donald Trump? Isn't that why, that he was, even though he ran as Republican, that he was a populist and didn't carry the old water for the Republicans, did something different?
True, but, you know, he's going against something that's been ingrained in our politics for a long time. And I don't think I'm going to see it in my generation, the change that we're all desiring. I think it's going to take a couple of generations. But the problem is, like we were talking this morning, between the media brainwashing people to where people really, they just vote party lines. But a lot of people are, it's kind of like a commercial. You run a commercial long enough, you start to believe the very thing you're seeing, even though you know it's not right or it's true, but you see it enough to where it just takes your mind and distort it to where it is true.
I'm going to run that commercial that says we're the best station on planet Earth. I'm going to start running. Let's run that one some more, okay?
All right. Well, good talking to you, John.
Likewise, man. I always appreciate the call from you. I want to say this. A couple things have stacked up here, and we mentioned, Robert Kennedy mentioned Coast Guard a second ago. I want to run through three things here. First of all, this one came in this morning, but I want to say hi to the folks out at Milton's Honda. Good folks at Milton's Honda. He said, hey, Sean, we're offering free oil change and filter change for active Coast Guard members, Hondas and Acura only. Because that's what they do out there. But so Milton's Honda, active Coast Guard members, Milton stepping up and offering free oil and filter change for active Coast Guard members. The number out there is 653-6000, or if you just Google, there's only one Milton's Honda around here, so Google that. Councilman John Williams says that when we were talking, Robert and I were talking, he said, Robert had said the retirees, Coast Guard retirees, had not been paid. He said, I was paid on December 27th, and the next retirement check is not due, so therefore no payments have been missed. All right. There's that one. Also, thank you to our buddy Ben. Sent me a link here. This is folks over at, this is for Fairways Indoor Golf Club. Fairways Indoor Golf Club said they are for Coasties. They can golf for free during the government shutdown. All you have to do is show your ID. There's quite a few things coming around. And we talked the other day about what USAA stepped up and did and how that's being, it's not going to fix everything for Coast Guard families, but it's just something. And maybe as a community, more people get together and we put something together that helps out those folks until we get things back online. All right, 1:30 FM Talk 106.5. We'll check in with Westwood One News and get Dr. Bill's forecast. And when we come back, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Oh, that's more like Jaws music. We'll take you into the interplanetary realms of coastal Mississippi. It's a story I put up on Twitter, a story now 45 years old about an alien abduction. And somebody who says, absolutely, it happened. Here's how it happened. And we'll talk to our buddy Rennie Brabner about the details of reporting that story way back when.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you here. Remember, podcast, this show, and some 40-odd hours a week. And talk about this show, odd may be the key word, but odd hours a week of programming that we roll up live local content on our podcast page, fmtalk1065.com. Just click the link for podcasts, and you can download them there. Or better yet, you can select to have them delivered to your smartphone using iTunes for Apple users, Stitcher if you're a Luddite like me with an Android phone, or if you want to go to Spotify to get your music, our podcasts are there. You go to TuneIn Radio to stream our station, our podcasts are there as well, so check them out and share them out there. This might be one that you'll want to share. It's a story that was, well, 45 years in the making or unmaking. It depends on how you look at it. A story that I popped up on Twitter earlier today that ran earlier this week from Fox 10, and Shelby Myers reporting the story. An alien abduction 45 years later, a Pascagoula man still says he was taken by aliens. Now, there are a lot of these stories that make it onto cable networks and, you know, Saturday evenings are running these kind of shows. But it's not every day that a friend of mine and a coworker has some insight into what it was like 1973 reporting a story, talking to a man who said, yep, they abducted me. It's my buddy Rennie Brabner. Hey, man.
Hey, that's what they said. Well, actually, only one of them said that.
Well, that's what I was wondering, too. So this story is you have, and now I guess it comes full circle, and the reason to talk about it now is this Calvin Parker, after 45 years, said
he has published a book. It's the first time he's admitted to remembering anything. He says that he was so scared that he did not want to say anything, and he figured if he told everybody he had passed out, he wouldn't have to talk about it. He says, I've published a book about it now. I'm not saying another word. Whatever I make off the book, I'm going to buy a houseboat, live with my wife the rest of my years.
All right. Well, this all goes down, at least according to the story. This is a fishing trip that didn't turn into a fishing trip right here in Pascagoula near Ingalls back in 73.
That's correct. On the west bank of the river across from the old shipyard was a what had been a shipyard called the Shawpeter Yard. There was a little... it was a kind of a junky area with grass and whatever, but there was like a crab wharf sticking out into the Pascagoula River. And these two fellows, older man, 45 years old, Charles Dixon, and 18-year-old Calvin Parker, worked at the F.B. Walker shipyard, which was a little further upriver. But they had decided that day to go fishing. Hickson loved to fish.
Okay.
And so they went down there sometime after dark, and as they tell the story, about 9 o'clock, they saw some blue lights, looked around, and there was this craft. Part of it opened up. A couple of beings came out of it. Parker says, as until this book, says that you know, he passed out and didn't remember anything. Hickson tells the story of him taking him in, moving all over his body this eye-like thing, and putting him back on the bank. And when they came to, you had two scared Mississippi fellas.
Yeah, and but the idea that he had Pat Parker, who now writes the book, who was the younger,
right? He was the younger.
It says he passed out.
That's what he said at the time.
But I, you know, I go through looking at the story. This is where, believe me, the second I see one of these stories, Rennie, you know me long enough, I go, yeah, okay, right. They had one too many cold beverages or something like that, and imagine. But it said the men would take lie detector tests and pass.
They did. We did not. We were not in the room. We were in the next room when they took that.
So you're reporting. And
we were in
the
next
too,
room when they were hypnotized.
Okay, you're a reporter for WLA.
Correct.
Okay. You're now, do they assign you, say, Brabner, you're going to Pascagoula
to
do this
did.
Story?
I came in, I had things that I was working on, wanted to do, and handed me a piece of wire copy and said, go talk to these two fellows that went on a UFO in Pascagoula. I said, oh, come on. I've got this and this and this.
Right, right.
And they reminded me that earlier that summer, I had done a story on a UFO report out on Calioka Road, out by where Mobile College is
right
now. And as the assignment editor said, you're now our UFO expert.
Because you did the one story. So
one story, you know, immediately an expert.
So pack up, Bradner, you're going to Pascagoula.
So my cameraman, Emory Arnett, and I headed off to Pascagoula. Decided on the way that the only place we knew to start was the sheriff's office,
okay,
who we had met before. So we go to Fred Diamond's office and talked to him and told him we wanted to see him. He said, oh, I got him in the back. And so at least we were.
So they still had him there when
well,
you.
Well, we thought we weren't going to have to hunt all of the county for him.
Right.
And he said, but when we get through, he said, you know, we're going to take him to a hospital and get him checked out. And he said, I'm sure after we're through, they'll, you know, let you talk to him. Well, we hang around there a while, and all of a sudden it dawned on both of us we'd probably been had.
Yeah.
It was well, long enough time had passed.
They'd gone out the other door.
So cameraman and I discussed Keesler or Singing River, only two options. Singing River was closer. Singing River Hospital.
Hospital, right.
We go tearing off down Highway 90 because there was no interstate in those days down there. And sure enough, back of the emergency room door, this fairly long line of Jackson County deputies' cars.
So they had they told you to hang tight there at the sheriff's department as they went out the other door with them and took them to the hospital.
Correct. Sheriff Diamond later told us, he said, you know, we told them we were through, we'd take them to the hospital, but the press was here and TV, and they said they didn't want to talk to us.
How did they, let me hit the rewind for a second here, Rennie, and how did they end up there at the sheriff's department? They go out, they're fishing on the crab wharf, they describe this ship coming down, doing the whatever, and how do they then end up at the sheriff's office?
They tell a story that they, you know, sat around trying to figure out what to do for a little bit.
So they get deposited back on the crab wharf or whatever? And it's
correct,
like,
on the ground there.
Okay.
And they decide that the thing to do is to call Keesler because the government needed to at least know this.
Okay.
Undetermined from what I can find whether they ever
actually
talked to
anybody. They weren't on a cell phone back then. They had to go to a payphone or somebody's house or...
So they went, no luck, effectively no luck there. They go to the Mississippi Press Register and beat on the front door, and the cleaning crew basically says, nothing we can do for you.
Right.
So they call the Jackson County Sheriff's Department and talk to one of the deputies, Glenn Ryder. And they tell him, says, you know, I need to talk to you. I need to report something, but you're going to laugh. He said, oh, I've seen it all. And he tells his story. He's still alive, one of the few still alive. He said, I won't laugh. I've seen it all. And the guy says, we've been picked up by a UFO. He said, and then I laughed. He said, well, in that case, y'all need to come on by here. So that's how
that's when they went over the sheriff's. Okay, so that's when you, and so then the call goes out. You get sent over. You come in. They head to Singing River Hospital. Now they're in the ER or something there? Or
well, what? They're trying to get in the back.
Okay.
We go, you know, barreling in there with our cameras and whatever. And we're pretty politely asked to leave, to get out of their way.
Yeah.
So we go out there and think for a few minutes, and we've got to get some film of something.
Right.
So between the two of us, we decided gaffer tape put over the locks would probably slow them down, particularly if we locked all of sheriff's cars. Because generally law enforcement.
I always knew you were an asymmetric thinker, is why we get along, but you're now out there. How do we delay the sheriff's department?
As near as I can tell, the statute's run on this.
I wonder what statute of limitation interfering with law enforcement would be. But
law enforcement people generally don't lock their doors at all.
Right.
Because they may have to go someplace in a hurry. So we lock the doors, put the tape on there, and we're sitting there waiting for them to come out. And they come out, and of course they, you know, try to open the door. That doesn't work. Then they get their keys, gaffer tape's not hard. It's like
right, but
duct
it gives
tape.
You enough time.
It's like duct tape, but it's not nearly as strong. That gives us enough time to talk to Parker. I'm sorry, to Hixon. And say, look, could we do an interview, and could we get some pictures of you? And he doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to do the interview at all. And after both I talked to him and my cameraman talked to him, he said, if you don't show my face, I'll answer your questions or try to.
Okay.
So we shot over his shoulder.
Okay.
Telling us his story of what had happened down there. And I still remember vividly him trying to make the claw-like shape with his hand as we talked to him, and he was explaining that these creatures had this claw-like thing. And so, you know, we go back to Mobile, and because we're still in film days now. We've got to get this developed to get on the 6 o'clock newscast.
Right.
We run it and make plans to go down there the next day, and we had found out that they were going to be at the shipyard where the two guys worked. A fellow named Joe Colingo, who's an attorney down there, who is married to one of the sisters of one of the brothers that owned the shipyard or whatever, was kind of running herd on what Saturday became a kind of a media circus.
Okay.
And then Alan Hynek shows up, who had been with Project Blue Book, a PhD from California, the Aerial Phenomena Research Institute or something.
And all of a sudden he's in Pascagoula.
All of a sudden they're in Pascagoula. Hmm. They start making arrangements for the polygraph. And we are kept separate from them, but literally in the next room. A lot of the media was kept out in the yard. Colingo said that they watched Channel 10, and they
so
knew
y'all
who
got
we
in.
Were. So we okay. we were at least inside where the coffee pot was.
Okay, good.
They apparently went through questioning. The Hynek made several reports of what he thought, you know, to us. There was apparently an attempt to do to hypnotize both of them. I'm told them when they tried to hypnotize Parker, it was a disaster. He was scared, petrified.
Let's do that. I'm going to run to the break because I want to come back and talk about this because you're there. They take him in the other room, but they pass, at least according to what they said,
they brought a polygraph operator from New Orleans in there, and he said they passed as far as he was concerned.
And you've told us in your description so far, these seem like either fantastic actors or people that truly believe something happened.
Let's talk about that when we come back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 150, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. My buddy, my co-worker, Rennie Brabner, who back in 1973 was doing that radio with pictures stuff.
TV.
I hear it's popular. When you were sent over because you were at that point the WALA UFO expert.
One story I had done before, and I immediately was considered to be an expert.
I love it.
It's a simpler time.
Hey, it still exists in newsrooms. They're like, you know how to spell that word? You're the expert. You go. So you're sent over, and we're following the account of this story. Two men fishing from a crab wharf there on the Pascagoula River near Ingalls. They say they got picked up, take it into a ship, probed with the eye thing or whatever, or looked over?
Yeah, and, you know, they go to the police. We chase them. Eventually, we get an interview. We go back to Mobile to get the film developed because that was pre-electronic days. And we do a story, and by the time the newscast is over, I'm told we're going back Saturday. We knew where they were going to be at the shipyard where they worked. Alan Hynek had been with Project Blue Book. Dr. Alan Hynek was there Saturday or came in Saturday. I mean,
that means he left California and comes to Pascagoula. That word got to him and he
pretty
was,
quick.
Yeah, that's okay.
Well, understand too. Now, we had sent film to Australia, to England, to the continent.
Well, you said, I mean, viral wasn't a term for a story back then, but it was going viral, right?
I've never covered anything with legs like that.
Really?
I mean, I may end up making a month's salary off of the film that we sent. The station built it, and that was after they took their expenses out of it.
Wow. It was, and so everybody, I mean,
you know.
It was a big story.
It was a lot of interest. I don't know if it's a big story, but it was a lot of interest.
Well put. So we last left, okay, you've got the polygraph going on. You have the two men go in there. You're not in the room, but you're in the building.
We're in the building. We're in the next room.
Okay, walk us through.
Okay, and, you know, Dr. Herner and Dr. James Harder come out and basically said, you know, let's get all the media together. And tell us what they think. And their basic, what they've decided after they've gone through the hypnosis, regression, and polygraph, was that they're not sure 100% what happened down there, but they are satisfied that something happened, and or at least that these two guys think something happened, sincerely think something happened, and that they did not create it out of whole cloth.
When you have two people saying, and I've got to tell you, I am a uber skeptic, but when you have two people, whatever it is, agreeing something happened and passing a polygraph, I gotta say something happened.
Well, at least you believe. I mean,
I don't know if it's UFOs,
you can lie on a polygraph if you believe the lie.
Correct.
You know?
But getting two people to be able, you know, lie the same way on a series of questions seems. I'm not saying it can't be done. I don't know.
Well,
but it seems
the other thing, there was a tape that I knew existed the first day we went down there. I did not hear it till a couple of weeks ago. The police had put a little cassette tape recorder in the room where Hickson and Parker were, and told them we'd be back in a little while, figuring when they came back, the two boys would say, "Oh man, we really got this one over on."
Right, right.
That's not what they said. They talked about being scared to death. They needed the government needed to know the country could be in danger. And that while they were petrified, they felt like that this needed to be public.
Now, so, and Hickson's contention was, and wrote the book and talked about this, that it was an alien abduction.
That was, that's what, and, you know, he was in some ways almost on a tour circuit. The young kid, until
Calvin
this
Parker,
most
right.
recent book, has never said a word about it.
But now he is.
Even there that day, I mean, he might not hide, but there was no conversation with Parker when I was there.
But now he puts his book out, and in listening to your account here, he said it happened.
He agrees almost word for word with Hickson.
Like, you know, it this is why it's interesting, because you have a situation where you have, for lack of a better term, it's probably incorrect, a corroborating witness, even though I'm a skeptic, and you have two people that are saying essentially the same thing, that are passing polygraphs.
Well, you do, and in a sense it's a shame that Hickson died back in 2011, so there's no way to now talk to both of them and compare.
Right.
But, you know, it is what it is.
Okay, well, you interviewed, you talked to those men, you followed the story from the word go. What do you think happened?
I don't know. I truly do not think that they made it up out of whole cloth. I think something happened down there that scared the daylights out of them, or something happened that they believe is exactly as they have portrayed it, and it scared the daylights out of them. I've covered a lot of stories in my time. Without a doubt, there are more people have asked me that question. What do you think really happened?
Because you have an insight. You have a first-hand insight that none of us do that are reading this account or even reading the book.
Well, but even after 40...
You talked to them. You saw them.
Before this, you know, came up here a few weeks ago when Fox 10 said, will you help us do this? You know, you figure the story's going to die. Most of the stories I've ever done, there's no interest in.
Mm-hmm.
This continues.
Well, because I compare this to...
like if you hear these UFO abduction stories, they're often one person with no other witnesses. You know, sure this happened. The second person makes this a more, once again, my skepticism, so I don't I'm going to follow you that you say you think something happened, but my skepticism says, but the idea that both of them have something similar enough to pass the polygraph, it really leaves me leaning on this. And if you want to grab a set of headphones quickly, I want to grab a call here. We probably only could take a couple here before the top of the hour. Paul Feinbaum show starts in just about 6 minutes, but we will go to Bill in beautiful downtown Dog River. Where is there? You've not been abducted there, have you?
No, I hope that never happens. I've always been a skeptic of this, but through the years, I've become more favorably inclined to believe these men. One question I've got is, these guys were both, let's say, good old boys, and I come from two backwood families, so I know it when I see it. I'm not sure that they were capable of making this story up, and I don't mean they were dumb or stupid, but who sits around making up UFO stories? And why would they subject themselves willingly to a lifetime of ridicule amongst their peers?
Those are the questions I'm asking. I'm with Bill, you. I'm with you. I don't know.
Bill, I agree with your premise there. I simply do not believe that they are sophisticated either individually or as a pair to make this kind of a story up to understand what could happen with the media and all of that sort of thing. So I've always felt like they didn't make it up. Not you know, in that sense. Do I believe a UFO landed down there? I'm not sure. I don't know what happened, but something happened, and it made them believe it was a UFO, and it scared the daylights out of them.
Yeah, I've also been a little more favorable to this. In 2013, I was standing out in my parents' front yard in Huntsville late at night, and saw seven UFOs. They were not disc or craft. They were bright red balls of fire slowly floating through the atmosphere. My father, who's a retired NASA, ex-World War II naval aviator, I yelled at him, and he came out and looked at them. And I said, "Daddy, what the hell is that?" And he said, "I don't know, son, but it's nothing we've got." And then he proceeded to tell me of a close encounter he had had near Camden, Alabama, at a hunting camp years earlier. And I said, "You know, Daddy, why hadn't you told me about this?" He said, "Son, in my generation, we didn't talk about these things. People think you were crazy and you could lose your security clearance."
Ha. Huh. Well, and I hate that we're up against the end of the hour, but we will bring this back up, this discussion going further. Name of this book, Rennie?
My Story, Calvin Parker, Pascagoula, The Closest Encounter. I know Amazon's got it because that's where this one came from. I don't know who else. Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, May.
Hey, thank you for the insight in this. We'll talk about it more
as soon as
when we go back to the coffee pot. All right, we'll be back tomorrow at 6. Feinbaum next.